Good morning, Jacob's Well.
Can you believe we made it? Godflakes 2014, here we are.
No, but honestly, this is something that I look forward to every year. Every spring, I know that Greg's going to email me and say, are you in? Do you want to do it? And I'll say yes, and then I'll start watching movies very differently for the next few months as I try to figure out which ones of these films can I say something about. And so last year, you might remember that I was here talking about Searching for Sugarman, which also won the Oscar for Best Documentary. And this movie, 20 Feet from Stardom, is this year's Oscar winner for Best Documentary. So I just figured, why not go with the best and keep doing that? It is on Netflix for any of you. Who has seen this movie before? Well, that's a lot more than I thought. Redbox and Netflix really helped us out on this one. Couldn't have planned that. But glad you've seen it. For those of you who just saw the trailer for the very first time, you guys are all looking fairly awake and intelligent today, so I'm guessing that you already figured out that this movie is about backup singers. Is anyone lost yet? We're all good? That's about all you need to know to really follow along. Last year, I really went into the story of Searching for Sugarman a lot because I think it was such a fascinating and almost unimaginable story. This one is a bit more straightforward, so I'm going to stick more with the main themes of the movie. To give you some context, and this is written in your Sunday paper, so maybe you've seen this already, this movie offers a glimpse into the lives and careers of a small group of backup singers. They don't follow very many. It's maybe a half dozen or 10 at most people that they really highlight in this movie. These are backup singers who have been the key ingredient to countless chart-topping songs over the last 50 years, yet they've remained basically unknown by anyone outside of the music industry. I mean, seriously, the backup singers that are in this film have been part of a lot of songs that you know. You don't realize they're in them, but these are songs that you've been hearing on the radio. Maybe it's the oldies radio station that your parents made you listen to. It's those songs. It's songs that are more recent, songs that are even coming out today they're still involved with. Just to give you a quick list of some of the people they've worked with so I can prove to you that they're legit. The Rolling Stones, Bruce Springsteen, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, Sting, and David Bowie. That's just a quick list of some of the artists that they've worked with. And like any good documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom spends a lot of time introducing these characters with their unique and layered, complex, overlapping stories. And it offers us opportunities to learn something about ourselves, about life and the world, and a topic which we may or may not have ever thought about before. How many of you have ever been sucked into a documentary about something that you had never even thought about before? I mean, the documentary section on Netflix, you're on a Saturday afternoon, you're trying to figure out what to do, and all of a sudden you're watching some documentary about a random thing that you had never given even 2 seconds of thought to. In the case of this movie, it's something that we've probably all thought a little bit about, that is singing and the music industry. Many of us are either singers or music people, or we dreamed or wished that we were talented so that could be our life as a rock star. But that's what this one is about. I read quite a few reviews about this movie as I was preparing, and one of the most common things that critics pointed out about this is that the backup singers in this film got their start in music in the church, pointing out that several were even the children, in this case the daughters, of pastors. Now, I don't know why they pointed that out. The movie does mention that, but so many of these critics not only pointed that out, but then went on to use religious language in the ways that they described this film. I don't know if this was intentional or perhaps just kind of felt unavoidable to them. But one writer from the Rolling Stone magazine actually said that when you watch this film, you hear the gospel in the voices of the backup singers. Now, as someone who more or less randomly chose a movie that I thought looked good, and then I read all these reviews about it after it's set in stone that I'm actually going to be talking about it, you got to know that when I read a review that says you hear the gospel in the voices of these people in the movie, that's like a gold mine, because it means that not only do I see some spiritual connections to this that I think I can share with you all, but I think naturally people that watch this movie get that sense as well. I actually have this little notebook that I use, and I've used it for the last several years as I've been preparing my message for Godflicks. And I watch the movie, and I have my little notebook with me, and I write little thoughts as I have them, and I write the time of the clip in the movie just in case it's something I want to use. And the very first thing I wrote as I was watching this movie this year was I wrote down, we are all backup singers for Jesus. And even as I was doing it, I was writing it going, this is super cheesy. But it's kind of true, right? I mean, even a person that just shows up at church every once in a while and has a sense for who God is and believes in Jesus realizes that in some ways living out the Christian faith is kind of like being a backup singer for Jesus. Or maybe an even more appropriate way to say it is like the opening band for Jesus. You know, we're trying to set it up. It's not about us, but it is, we're involved, and it's really about Jesus. John the Baptist is probably the best example we have in the Bible of someone who lived this way. He's known for being in the spotlight, having a really important role in the Christian story, yet he never forgot that it wasn't about him. John was a wild man and a public figure who lived in the time just before and during Jesus' public ministry. And in Christian art, he's often seen as someone pointing to Jesus. So you see on the lower right, that's a depiction of Jesus with John the Baptist pointing to him, meaning anything I do reflects on this guy. I'm pointing to him. The most maybe famous line in the Bible of John the Baptist is when he says, "After me comes one more powerful than I, whose sandals I'm not even worthy to untie." And I don't know if it's because I was just thinking about that verse again, and this is a series on movies, but hearing the line from John the Baptist saying, "I'm not worthy to untie his sandals," made me think of another scene from a movie that I really liked as a kid. Maybe you liked that movie like I did when I was a kid, and maybe this will inspire you to go watch it again. I spent time last week with Greg and Chris and Melissa just talking through all the different themes from this movie, talking about what we were going to do here this morning, and it was a really, really helpful conversation for me to gather my thoughts and focus in on a few things. One of the things we realized is that the issues in this movie, whether you had seen it or not, and at that point Chris was the only one who had actually seen it, so thanks everyone else for coming prepared for that meeting. I'm just kidding. But we had this great conversation where really quickly we realized that the issues that the people in this movie are talking about, the complex questions and challenges that they faced as musicians and as backup singers, are not unlike the kinds of things that we deal with all the time, even if we're not in the music industry. It's difficult to watch this movie and not think about your own life or your own relationships and career. One of the many troubling stories that's told in the movie is about these artists who contribute to the songs. They're the backup singers, or in some cases they're even the main singers in a song, only to find out that that song is going to be used for another band. They're never going to get any credit. Their name is never on it. Another band might even get all the money and get to perform the songs that they never even recorded. And I'm guessing that in some way or another you've experienced something like that in your own life, and perhaps especially in your own career. Contributing towards something and then realizing that the recognition isn't going to be evenly distributed among those who are involved is not a fun thing to experience. It's normal to want credit for what you've done. And when there's a significant difference between the amount of credit that we expect and what we actually receive, it's natural to feel upset or even cheated. Jesus actually tells a great story about this in the Gospels. It's known as the parable of the workers in the field. You have this landowner who goes out first thing in the morning and hires a bunch of people to come work in his land. And then at 9 in the morning, he goes and finds some more people to come work on his land. And then at noon and at 3 and even at 5 o'clock, he goes and finds more workers, agreeing with all of them that they will get paid the regular daily wage. And at the end of the day, he has his manager get everybody together and he says, "Pay them all what we agreed to pay them, starting with those that started later in the day." And you can imagine those that have been working since early in the morning in the hot sun of the day are thinking, "This is not fair." So they raise a fuss. They say, "Why are they getting paid the same as us when they worked so much fewer hours?" And I think there's an injustice that we all are looking for, because we see fairness in only a certain way. And of course, Jesus tells this story as a way of saying that the first will be last, and the last will be first. And who are we to judge what God gives out to his children? And so you have this challenge here of figuring out what is fair, what does it mean to receive the appropriate amount of credit for what we've done? The reality is sacrificing individual recognition for the sake of creating something is rare. Yet this film basically is a story of several people who have spent their entire careers, 40, 50, more years than that, doing that, just that. They're creating music that really brings glory to people other than themselves. They just get to play a role. As one of the women in the film describes, being a backup singer means that you can't hold on to your individual vocal persona. So the way that you would normally do it, the way that you'd want to do it, you got to hold that back because you're trying to blend and mesh with the other voices. You're trying to be part of something together. And I think that's kind of what we're trying to do being part of a community of faith. I mean, Jacob's Well is only as good as it is because people come together, bringing their unique gifts, but also recognizing that it's not going to be about them. We're going to blend those things together into a way that when we lay down our egos and we're at our best individually, we're at our best as a community. Now, when we got to this point in the conversation that I mentioned earlier when I was hanging out with Chris and Melissa and Greg, the conversation really took a great turn where it started getting really, really good. And in the interest of sharing credit, my thoughts going forward are actually a combination of things that I said and that they said and we kind of talked about together. So when I say that they're my thoughts, they're really their thoughts too. Since I'm talking about people not getting credit for things, I figured I probably shouldn't do the same to others right then. And one of the things that was shared was this brilliant quote from Greg where he said, "There's no limit to what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit." And now to be fair to Greg, he was quick after we all were like, whoa, that was so profound. And he was like, well, actually, my father-in-law says that. So he even shared the credit with others about that. But that's incredibly true, right? There is no limit to what you can accomplish if you're able to not care about who gets the credit. But it's also incredibly difficult to actually do that. I can't stress how helpful that conversation was. And one of the things that we ended up talking about was this question that I think this movie just begs to ask of us who engage with it, which is, you know, these women were all 20 feet from stardom. They were literally 20 feet off center stage from the main singer. But in our own lives, we're not all musicians, but we do things where there's oftentimes one person or a team of people who are in the middle, and we might be a little bit ways off. So we're 20 feet from something. And so I'm wondering, what are you 20 feet from? He is not 20 feet from me. We are 20 feet from something. And this question can be seen as in terms of relationships. What are we close to in relationships? Or in our career, in our work, or in our spiritual journey, or any other number of things. What I think it's really getting at is what opportunities or what challenges seem to be just ahead of you. These are things that you could probably avoid, but that you know might lead to a change that can make your life a little bit more exciting or a little bit more fulfilling if you took them head on. Now, just to be clear, I realize that not all opportunities should be taken. It's possible that where you are right now in life and in work and relationships and any other thing is where you should be. But isn't it also possible that the comfort of remaining there, where you are, is keeping you from living more fully? Maybe, if you want to use spiritual language, being the person that God created you to be. Now, not everyone wants to be a star. I realize that. Not everyone should be a star. I realize that as well. But I'd assume that in a group this size, we actually probably have more backup singers than lead singers. So one thing I want to say is that just because you might not be in the front in any of those kinds of areas of your life doesn't mean you're not a leader. What you're doing is just as important to contributing to those things that you're part of. And who knows, maybe it's time for some of us who have had opportunities to be more in the lead role to take a step aside and let others who are ready to do that for a little while. The more I've thought about it, the more I've talked to people about it, I really, really believe that we are all 20 feet from something. Now, I do want to watch one clip from the film, and I'll set it up for you real quick. The film does a great job of making it clear that these backup singers, they aren't all necessarily bitter that they didn't make it. I mean, several of them had a chance to go solo. Several of them decided not to. Some of them, in their own personality, they understood that their ego was not big enough to be the star. They actually wanted to be the supporting person. And there's this great part about two-thirds of the way into the movie. For those of you who have seen it, you understand the context. But they're basically reflecting back on the opportunities that they had and the risks that they took and how they feel about how things ended up. So that's what this clip is.
I've got dreams, dreams to remember.
There's no guarantees in entertainment. There's no guarantees.
Dreams to remember.
I had been offered the chance to go solo several times. And then ultimately I ended up with Warner Brothers. The studio was smoking. It was just amazing. it was just amazing.
And how was the record received?
Not that well.
I've got dreams to remember.
If you are out there, your name is on that doggone marquee. The pressure is on them. And sometimes that can cause problems in a person's life.
Listen to me.
I've got dreams. Dreams to remember.
I had a contract as a solo artist, and then I was kept on, but shelved. So I was on Motown, but not. And it hasn't been easy. You know, there's stuff that goes on with people.
I've got dreams.
I had a daughter to raise. I had a band to support. I mean, it just got crazy.
I've got dreams.
Rough dreams.
Dreams to remember.
Listen, honey.
I've got dreams.
The kind of feeling that you get from people screaming in the audience, if you're always looking for that in life, you're gonna crash.
I still want you to stay.
The focus wasn't on music anymore.
I still love you anyway.
I had to send my daughter to live with my brother and his kids while I was trying to scrape things together to pay the gas bill.
Girl, you just satisfy me.
I remember her putting out a record, but then I looked up and then I didn't see Claudia anymore. She said thank you and good night. That's what she said.
I thought people would be banging down on my door for deals, and it didn't happen like that. You're too fat. You're too old. You know, you should seriously think about another career. And after that, it's hell. I think if I had made it, like what the world, millions of dollars on that, I probably wouldn't be sitting in this chair talking to you right now. Because I would have OD'd somewhere.
It's not a level playing field. It never is a level playing field, and you come into life understanding that. It's not about fairness. It's not really about talent, you know. It's circumstance, it's luck, it's destiny. I don't know what it is, but the best people deal with that.
Sting is a smart dude. But your own rock star in residence, Chris Tripolino, is a pretty smart dude, too. And during our conversations, one of the things that he helped articulate for us was these categories. If we're all 20 feet from something, there's these kind of subcategories that we can fall into. And here's how he kind of helped us understand this. And I want you to kind of see in your own life at different times or even maybe currently, which, if maybe even more than one of these, you might fit into. You can be 20 feet and afraid. You can be scared to pursue things. It's like this fear of failure. And so it keeps you from doing those things that are right in front of you that you know you might have the talent or the ability to do. You can also be 20 feet and angry. You can have things that you've done but not received credit for. And so as a result, you're resentful and maybe less likely to do it again. And then finally, you can be 20 feet and shining, which is to say you're doing the things that you're meant to do. You're living in your sweet spot, your calling. But you're still 20 feet away from figuring out how to continue doing that and to be better and better at it. But we're 20 feet from something, and there's all sorts of reasons that we can be held back from taking those next steps. I already mentioned the fear of failure. There's also a realistic kind of fear of success. I don't know if any of you have already faced a situation where you realize, I have this thing I could do, and if I did it, who knows how successful I'd be. And I may be scared of that. You heard the woman say she's glad she didn't make it because she thought she might have gone over the deep end if she had done that. Maybe you couldn't handle the success that would come from doing something. So your fear is more of success than failure. Or maybe it's more of a discernment, a vocational kind of identity crisis where you think and think and think and give so much time trying to figure out what's right that you never actually do anything. There's a term for this. They say it's paralysis by analysis, right? We don't do anything because we want to make sure we do the right thing, so we don't do anything. And then finally, one thing that Greg threw out, and I'm not old enough to talk about this one, so he can do this later, but maybe it's something like a midlife crisis where you're just kind of questioning, here's all the things I've done and I have a lot of life left, but I don't know how to do it, and maybe I just want to be someone different for a little while, and trying to figure out how does that play in to the opportunities and challenges that are right in front of you. Well, I said earlier that I wasn't going to say much about the specifics of this movie in terms of the story, but there is one story that I feel like I just have to share. And it's about this woman named Darlene Love. Darlene is one of the singers in the film who got her start in the church. She's highlighted in this movie. If you guys have watched it, you probably thought she was pretty great, both talented and a fun personality. Starting back in the 50s and 60s, she's a backup singer for people like Elvis and Sinatra and the Beach Boys. And she started working with a producer named Phil Spector. Some of you guys know about Phil Spector. He's a kind of a creepy, slimy guy, but he made a ton of hits back in the day. And so she's working with Phil Spector, and she's actually the one that lived out the story of recording songs and then having other bands get all the credit for them. So you can imagine how frustrating that is. So year after year, she's grinding, contributing to hit music, and not getting her due, as it is in the music industry. So she's frustrated, and eventually she leaves music altogether. This is sometime in the 70s. She figures out another way of life, and for her that becomes cleaning houses. That's what she does for a living. And she tells this story about one day in the wintertime when she's cleaning someone's bathroom, and she has the radio on, and a song comes on that is her song. So she's cleaning someone's bathroom, and the song comes on the radio. You can start to hear it now. And so she realizes when hearing this that she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do. So she has this gift that she wants to share with the world, and she decides, you know, what the heck, I'm gonna give it another go and see what happens. So she leaves the industry of cleaning houses to go back into the industry of music, and she goes out as a solo artist, and she takes a leap of faith, and she moves to New York City, and she starts singing. And her big break comes in 1986 when she was invited to perform on the David Letterman show. She goes back, she goes on the David Letterman show. This is 1986, so Dave Letterman is on the Tonight Show. This is right after Johnny Carson, and it's in New York. And she sings the song that she had heard on the radio when she's cleaning that bathroom. So I want to show you actually a clip from the 1986 Tonight Show.
All right, this is going to be great. In 1963... my next guest recorded a song called Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. It was that very first rock and roll Christmas hit ever, yeah, and has been released as a single every year since. It is also one of the most popular tunes on this legendary album right here, Phil Spector's Christmas album. There it is, right there. Ladies and gentlemen, here singing it tonight with our band, please welcome the one and only Darlene Love.
Well, despite the fact that it looked like she was a little scared to come out at first, maybe she had a fear of failure or success, it went well, and Dave Letterman invites her to come back the next year. And this has actually become a tradition to the point where this year when Dave Letterman retires, it will likely be the end of a nearly 30-year tradition where she goes on the David Letterman show the last episode before Christmas every year and sings that song. And so they did a little thing about it on the 25th anniversary. I want to, just so you can see how far Dave Letterman has evolved as well. Here's one from 2011.
Very nice. Tonight marks the 25th anniversary of a favorite holiday tradition here at The Late Show, featuring our next guest. Earlier this year, this woman was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the remarkable Darlene Love.
Some of you might actually recognize Darlene Love. She was the wife of Danny Glover in all the Lethal Weapon movies. So if you're thinking, she looks familiar, you probably know that song as well. It's been on the radio for the last 40, 50 years during the Christmas time. Well, Darlene Love had success, as I said, in the early stages of her career. She made it in many different ways. But she got discouraged. She was 20 feet and angry. She was resentful. So she left music and ended up fearing whether she could actually be successful again. So then she was 20 feet and scared, or 20 feet and afraid. Yet in a moment of clarity, she realizes that she still has gifts to share. And she had this inspiration to give it another try. And she's been shining ever since. As you heard Dave Letterman say, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And if you remember back to the trailer right before I came up and started talking, Bette Midler gave her introduction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a few years ago. And in her statement, as she introduces her, she says, "And it's about time." And I wonder, what are those things in all of our lives where we would say not only that we're recognized for them, but that we just do them, where it's about time that we have that moment of clarity and take that step forward. So I want to ask you again, what are you 20 feet from? What opportunities or what challenges could you or should you take? Are there things that you've been putting off for fear that they either will or won't go as well as you hoped? I mean, we all have stuff that we're avoiding for good and for bad reasons, but maybe it is time to give it some more thought and some more prayer to figure out how we should step forward. So here's a blessing for you. May God, who illuminates the darkness, give you the vision to know when to step forward, the patience to know how fast to go, and the courage to keep faith even when it feels like you're lost. Amen. In the Bible, in the very first book in Genesis, you have this story of Abraham, the father of God's descendants, who has been promised for years that he will have children, and he's getting up there in age, and he hasn't yet. And God, in a moment of kind of, I don't know if it would say a parental kind of moment, takes Abraham outside and just says, "Look up at the sky and see the stars." And he's telling Abraham, "These are like the family that you will have." And I love this image that's how maybe God sees us, is as those stars up there in the sky shining. And I'm from a small town in Iowa where it was normal for kids to go outside and play Ghosts in the Graveyard and kick the can. And on a clear summer night, we'd actually get up on the ladder on my neighbor's roof, and we'd lay there for hours and look for falling stars. And I know that in the Twin Cities, you can't see the stars in quite the same way, but I hope that in the next few nights, if it's a clear one, you'll go out there and you'll look at the stars and you'll see them shining, and you'll remember that that's the way God sees us. So go out into the world and shine. Amen.